For those that are going to stay for the Bible study, we'll go ahead and begin. So you're welcome to comment as we go through. I know that you've all spent hours contemplating what's going to be different after Christ returns. As we learned in the sermon, things are going to change, and thankfully they are. I think that's the exciting thing, is they're going to change, and hopefully we can all be a part of that great change that's coming to the world. But we might think about some specifics that God tells us are going to change. I mean, if you really wanted to look at changes that are going to come about, all you have to do is go through the book of Isaiah. And you've got one thing after another mentioned. Some of them are repeated, but you're talking about changes that are going to occur. And as you look the scripture that I thought about was in Revelation chapter 21, verse 5, where it says, "And he that sat upon the throne said, Behold, I make all things new. And he said unto me, Write, for these words are true and faithful." So that's reassurance that it's all going to change, and we look forward to that change occurring and the beginning of a better world that will last, thankfully, for 1,000 years. When you look at just a question that I thought I would start with that was not in what I originally sent out, but will lay the groundwork for what we're going to talk about. And you have this particular example used twice by Jesus Christ, once in Matthew and second time in Luke. In Matthew chapter 9, verse 16, it says, "No one puts a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old garment, for the patch pulls away from the garment and the tear is made worse. Verse 17, nor do they put new wine into old wineskins, or else the wineskins break and the wine is spilled. The wineskins are ruined, but they put new wine into new wineskins, and both are preserved." Can you think of any way that those scriptures would apply to the world, you know, the coming of Christ? It says that, you know, you're not going to put unshrunk cloth on an old garment, because, you know, once you put it on there and it's different that it's going to cause it to rip, and it's just not going to work well. And so can you see any application to that, to the coming of Christ and beyond? Rich?
I was thinking people that are used to power because of their ability or wealth, and when Christ returns, they may still think, hey, I'm able to lead people, and have that same mindset, and it's not going to work out.
Right. I mean, Bob?
He's not going to go to the local Baptist church and try to rework it into the church of God.
I mean, yes, Richard?
Well, I think one of the big things, the principle you're talking about here, is that you can't apply the laws and governments of this world to the society that will be existing then, because it won't work. The world will change, or begin to change, over to a different mindset, one where there really is equality and justice and truth and compassion, where they are misapplied and incorrectly used in this world. The laws will be based on God's laws, and it will be fairly applied to everyone.
Okay. Kenny?
Well, you know, the culture will be changed, obviously, but then politics will be history. So we'll get into that, whatever.
Well, think about this. Just think about this fundamentally. This is a fundamental, it's really what this alludes to. It doesn't directly apply to the coming of Christ, but it's a fundamental principle that we'll see applied in the world tomorrow. As you look at this world, ask yourself, is this working? Okay, how many of you think this is working? All right. Let's say if you take the old cloth, which is what this is, and put it on the new, how's that going to work? If it's not going to work in principle based on patching clothing, it's not going to work. You know, we're not going to patch up the world to come. Because, and so what you're talking about is a fundamental change. It's going to be different, complete. It may not be new because the word actually means renovated, renewed. It's not just going to be totally wiped out, but there's going to be a radical change in the way things are. You have another comment?
I was just going to say, as far as that verse goes, it's like you just keep putting lipstick on a pig.
True. You know, it's still a pig, yeah. You know, even with the lipstick. So, I mean, so the thing that God wants us to realize is what we're used to is not going to be anymore. It's not going to be. You're going to have people that will try to perpetuate that, maybe, you know, that, but it's not going to last long because everybody's going to be pointed into a new direction and a new way of living. And I think we can all be excited about that. Any other, I mean, when I went to, before I came into the church, I went to Cal State Fullerton, a nice college at the time, and you had nice buildings, nice grounds, and I thought, why wouldn't we just carry this on into after Christ coming? And this is a new person in the church, and I didn't see, this isn't going to get it. It's not going to be able to. It's all going to be so different and better than what we experience today. For instance, what is the foundation for our educational system? It's the Greeks and the Romans. So as you have an educational system in the world tomorrow, are we going to go forward with a system based on the Greeks and the Romans? All you have to do is ask yourself, how's that working out? It's not. So you're going to have something completely new. You know, how many of you have visited monuments throughout the world, you know, monasteries, churches, you know, these great Gothic churches? You may have gone to Notre Dame and gone to these different places, and they're pretty interesting, but you know what? What do we need those for once God's kingdom has been established? And I'm just, you know, at one point I thought, well, we'll preserve them. But at this point, what for? Because all those things are interesting achievements, but many of them, as you look at them, they're built and they're wonderful and they took centuries to build. But guess what? They've all settled. They've all, you know, it's not the perfect building that they wanted it to be. But what's going to be built is going to be magnificent. You think, well, those pyramids are pretty cool. We'll keep those. Why? How did they build them? On the backs of slaves. You know, and a lot of the building that was done throughout the world, these monuments, pretty impressive, but a lot of sweat and blood and tears went into all of that. So God's going to build stuff that's going to last forever. It's going to be built right. And if you think the things are magnificent now, that's what man came up with. What do you think God's going to come up with? I mean, just look at what the premier example of all things new. The new heavens and new earth. As you look at the description, you know, we can kind of imagine that, but that's way beyond what we can ever contemplate. And I don't think we can fully comprehend it. And I've heard different people give it a shot, and I understand it to a certain degree, but that's going to be beyond anything that we've ever experienced. And it's going to be huge. It's going to be magnificent and impressive. But it's just the way things are going to be on out into eternity. So it's just, you know, that's, you know, I want you to talk, and I don't need to talk, but, think about those things and expand your mind into this is going to be completely different than anything that we've ever experienced. And it's going to be better. So any things that, so we're not going to take this world, you know, because fundamentally, if we're just going to take this world and impose it on the next, I mean, we could have Satan. How's that going to work out? It hasn't worked out from day one. So he's gone, thankfully. And so as you see that, how might, you know, so as you think about this, what so God says, talks about all things new, and he talks about the restoration of all things, all right? So it's going to be new and different, and it's going to be a restoration of all things. What needs to be restored? What will be restored? I mean, when God, when you get to day one with Adam and Eve, everything was the way God wanted it. But with Adam and Eve's sin, it all changed in a dramatic way. And we live in a certain world and have certain experiences. But you know, even the world in which we can function, it all changed at the flood. Because what does God tell you? He destroyed the world before the flood. Yes, Janice. Okay.
Oh, all right.
Everybody wants to hear you. Everybody wants to hear you.
See if you get this back.
Okay.
Two things that I'm really can think about that I'm looking forward to. One is the family being restored and babies having a father and a mother that are married and are together and that they come up in a real secure, loving home. That's number one priority that I would want to see. The second thing is the food. I can hardly wait to taste some of the delicious food and see the grapes that are just almost hanging down. It takes two men to haul them. And the harvest season's one not ending before the next one starts. Anyway, I think that having delicious food for people who are living at that time will be a great, great thing, and it won't be tasteless tomatoes and tasteless green beans.
Absolutely. I mean, think about, you know, somebody mentioned that if you really have vegetables grown the way that they're supposed to be grown, they're delicious. And so I've been waiting my entire life for that, and it hasn't happened yet. So anyway, apparently, they're probably the way they are. It's just my taste buds are so warped that they're not the things that I'm looking forward to. But you know, you are going to have a agricultural system that's going to be completely different. And you saw what they were producing, and at the time Israel was coming into the land of Canaan, and they brought that great big bunch of grapes out, held by two men. How many of you have seen bunches of grapes to that large? Not me. I've never seen them. So even that period of time after the flood, they had crops that were growing and abundant and huge. And so things are going to change. Yes, Rich?
Yes, and I was wondering if the world is going to have a real climate change. And they talk about climate change, but I'm talking about a climate change where the earth goes back to the way it was during the Garden of Eden, and the whole world will be filled with vegetation, like you're mentioning, Garden of Eden, beauty and colors and great food.
Right, and the thing is, you know, with a lot of the food we have, do we get the nutrition we need? And I think that's going to be a fundamental thing. You're going to eat the food, and it will be good tasting, and it will be nutritious. And we'll have healthy bodies. You know, one of the challenges we have now is there's GMO stuff that we can't eat. God didn't just, you know, GMO stuff is maybe produced abundantly, but your body can't process it. God designed it so it was perfect, so you could eat it, no allergies. You're not going to have all of that stuff to deal with. You know, we're not going to have, you know, Billy brings his peanut butter and jelly sandwich to school, and either gets sent home or eats that peanut some other kid he trades with another kid with a sandwich, and that kid has some sort of allergy. You're not going to have that. You're going to have a completely different system, and the things that you get are nutritious. They're going to build your body. You're not going to have to worry about all. How many, if you were in the church 50 years ago, how many gluten-free tables did we have? We didn't, you know. Maybe we should have, but we didn't know anything about gluten, you know. But the reason we can't handle gluten and some of the things that we're dealing with is because our bodies, you know, our world is not as God created it. But God's going to bring it back, restore all things to where it's going to be a healthy world. It's going to be a place where there's good food, nutritious food, and it's available to everyone. Because God wants everybody to prosper. God wants everybody to be healthy. He doesn't want anybody to be sick. So it's going to be a radical change, and you're going to be able to have confidence. You know, sometimes you get stuff that comes out and you're not sure, well, where was that grown? Well, it was grown in this particular country, and you're like, I don't think I'm going to have that. I'm going to get something else. We don't have confidence in it because you don't know what's in it. You don't know what kind of fertilizer they use and all of that. So it's going to be, you know, God's going to establish a confidence in what's available because God's going to guide in how it's done. It's not going to be a dictatorship, but it's going to, God's going to show people the way, and they're going to apply it. Janice, hold on. And I'm just talking here. I'm not an expert. All I can do is imagine.
I have a question. Is there going to be poverty at all in the world tomorrow? Poverty, not like we know it, but poor, or because Christ said, "The poor you have with you always." At that time, is everybody going to be well off, or will people? Well, there be some who perhaps do not flourish?
What do you think?
I think the lazy ones will be in poverty.
Okay.
But I don't know whether we'll have lazy people or not there. You know.
How many of you think there will be poverty in the world tomorrow? Okay. How many of you think no? Okay. Well, one of the things you might think about is why does poverty occur? Now, sometimes it occurs because people suffer floods, crop failures, and all of that kind of thing. Isn't that right? But does poverty ever occur because people don't work? I'm not willing to do that. And they're not willing to go out and put the time in the field, you know? So I think things will grow easier, but I think some of it's, there's still going to be a responsibility there. Linda? Oh, here she comes.
All right, so Zechariah 14, verse 18. And if the family of Egypt go not up and come not that have no rain, there shall be the plague wherewith the Lord will smite the heathen that do not come up to keep the peace of tabernacles. So this is within the context of the kingdom. And so it says, if you're not keeping the holy days, you're going to have famine, and not having enough food, that is a form of poverty. So
yeah, there's
absolutely will be poverty.
There's a consequence. And God will allow those consequences, but I think it's not like today. You have all the people that are hungry, starving, famines, and all the things that we go through in this time. You're not going to have all that. But there will be some of it because God's still teaching lessons. And God will say, okay, look, you know what? I cut the rain off from you guys. So, but what does God want them to do? Does he want to starve them out? Does he want to destroy them? What is God seeking to accomplish by cutting off the rain? What do they have to do for it to improve? Bob?
Well, he's expecting them to change whatever particular area he's concerned with.
And you know what? He's willing to bless them.
As far as the answer to your first question, I think there'll always be people that are more prosperous than others. They work harder, they got more talent, and they get better breaks and all that. But I don't think there'll be any abject poverty.
No, I don't think it's going to be wide. It's not going to be widespread. I think it will be, you know, there will be individuals who will suffer from it. But God's goal is for people to prosper and do well. And he wants to bless them. He doesn't, you know, he's not looking, you know, wanting to curse them. Rich?
Of course, the knowledge of the Lord will be spread throughout all the earth, and God will be ruling over all the earth. And when his judgments come down, people will understand why they are not eating well. They will understand what needs to be done. And they will have a set of laws established similar to what they had in Israel during the Old Testament times. And when people start showing tough love to these people that do not work, then they'll turn around, and I think they'll be, because God knows the human psyche, that once you start doing something and you see some accomplishment, I think that laziness will be set aside, and then they'll start really enjoying life and see the benefits of following God's way of life, and it'll be an example for others.
Yeah, I think, you know, there will be free moral agency, and you know, one of the things that works in our age, and I think it will still work in the world tomorrow, is local. When you look at, that's how God wanted things to be, was done more on a local level instead of the federal government or the world government imposing their will. Okay, you live in wherever the world government is, or you live in Washington, D.C., do you understand what's going on in my little community? No, you don't. You're way far away. And you can't see exactly what's going on here. And the way things used to be, and when you look at Israel, when somebody stole something, where did they deal with it? If they caught them, where did they deal with it? They dealt with it in the community. Guess who you had to go before? You had to go before the elders, and you knew them all, and they all knew you. Oh, it's little Johnny again. So little Johnny standing there, and he said, "Now you stole Ed's cow." Now, I don't know what you thought you were going to do with that, but anyway, we saw it's Ed's cow. And you keep doing this, and you're going to have to repay Ed. Guess what? You know how he repaid him? He probably didn't have any money, so what did he do? He's working for Ed, probably milking his cow. You know, and so he got some hands-on experience working for somebody, and he learned it right there in his own community, and you took care of the problem in your own community. That's the way things used to be. It was in your own community. You knew these people, all right? So, you know, there's the embarrassment factor. Whew, I know all these people. And, you know, your parents would tell you, you're a shame to the family, you know? Probably some of us heard that because they said you need to straighten up and fly right. And it was more local, and local works. You know your leaders, you know the people in the community, and you can work together to make the community a better place. You know what the needs are there. So I think things will be local. God is, you know, Christ is not going to deal with everything. Well, you guys were out of line, so we're asking Christ to come down here and straighten you guys out. If Christ comes down, it's probably pretty serious, and you really don't want him to come down and visit, other than for the fun of it, you know. It's a pleasant visit versus corrective. And it probably won't be Christ coming down. It'll probably be one of the saints that will come down and deal with it. But hopefully, you know, that's a possibility, but I don't think that's going to be all the time. Pat?
That's exactly what you said there, where it says in Isaiah, yeah, let me read that. It says, whether you turn to the right or to the left, your ears will hear a voice behind you saying, this is the way, walk in it.
Right, and it won't be a voice from Jerusalem, you know, that distant voice. Knock it off. It'll be right there behind you. It'll be one you can hear because it's right there close. You know, it's right there close, and it can help you they're guiding you in the way, because they know the way and they can point you to the right direction. And it will be done locally, and everybody will, and you know, it's going to be, Christ is not just going to beat everybody into submission. Yes, you have the situation like they're talking about Egypt not coming unto the feast. You'll have some of that, but a lot of it is going to be accomplished through example. When people see what they're doing works, look at how, you know, things are going in their part of the world. Look at this. We want this here. We're tired of the poverty. We're tired of crop failure. We're tired of the insects. We're tired of all this stuff. And God said, it can be that way, but it's a matter of you beginning to conduct yourself in a way that is in harmony with my way of living. And as people see it and come to understand how to apply it, you know, like we heard about today, change. It requires change. I can't do it this way anymore. Can't do it. You know, so if, you know, when you weigh out a measure for somebody, grain that they're buying from you, you can't put the finger on the scale. You can't cheat them. You have to be accurate and give them what they bought. And today, you know, how much of that kind of thing goes on? We don't know. But there will be a different mindset to teach people to do the right thing and to see that the right thing will work. It will work, and you'll prosper as a result of doing it. Today, do people even know what the right thing is? Look at the crazy ideas that people think are right. And they're never going to work. You know, you look at some of the ideas where millions and millions of people have died. So that didn't work. Take, you know, Pol Pot wanted everybody to go out and be farmers. Okay, these people lived in the city. They didn't know anything about farming. And they just sent them out there with a bunch of tools and go for it. Millions of people starved because they didn't know what to do. So you can impose things on people, but if they don't know how to, you know, hoe and dig and plow and all of that, what are they going to do? They're not going to be successful at it. I mean, I'm a perfect example. I've been trying to grow a garden for years, and once in a while we hit some good tomatoes and peppers, but most of the time it's not working. So anyway, there are things we're still learning, and we've been trying for years to get it right. So there are others of you who do really well, but it's going to take time and training and teaching to get these things done. And as people see the example in Israel, then people in Egypt, people in Assyria, they're all going to say, we want some of this too. Yes, Rich? Hold on.
I remember a comment Jesus said when I first started reading the Bible a long, long time ago. He said, it's more blessed to give than receive. And I'm thinking to myself, I like to receive, you know. As far as me giving, you know, I'd rather have the goodies given to me. But there will be a mindset and of that. And I think of the barns building days when communities would get together and different individuals would come out and help build barns. And they really got to know each other and they really felt good about helping each other. And I think that spirit is going to be all over the face of the earth. And that's what's going to really make the millennium such a wonderful place to be. And you get to know more and more friends that way. And you share your skills with others. And I also think we're not going to have these 8-hour, 10-hour jobs, you know, where we go into a building and say stuck in traffic and all that type of thing, which is nothing but a tension builder. And so I think we're going to be more agrarian, you know, people of the soil, so to speak. And I think we're really going to develop a lot of friends in the millennium. It's going to be a wonderful time.
Go ahead, Pat.
With what Mr. Schultz just said, I think that brings to mind to me is what Jesus said in Matthew 22 and 37 through 40, I think. Love your God with all your heart, your soul, and your mind first, and then your
The second one is just almost important. Love your neighbor as yourself. We're going to have plenty of friends.
One thing that my grandmother had seven children, and I don't know what happened, but back in the 30s, her house burned down. She lived in a small town north of Charlotte called Huntersville, and her house burned down. So here's this widow with seven children, house burns down. All right, so what happened? Interestingly, the community rebuilt her house. It wasn't the federal government, it was the community, and they all pitched in to rebuild the house. And that's the kind of thing that God will be looking for. Where's that sense of community that people watched out for each other and took care of each other? And that's the way it used to be. And it was a good way to live, but that's not how it is. So now, and today, how many of you know your neighbors? Everybody lives in their little box, and you see them, and you say hi, and you say bye, and most of the people I know because of walking the dog. So I have my dog friends. You know, when you go out, they know me, they know my dog, or whatever. And the thing is, though, you're going to have a world where people know each other, and as they hear about needs, they will pitch in and help each other. And you do see that once in a while, and it's a wonderful thing. But it's going to be common throughout the world where people will see these people are hurting or these people need help, and they'll help each other. And it's a different mindset than we have many times in the world in which we live. Okay, Rich? Hold on.
If you've ever been to a foreign country, and I haven't a lot, but I remember going over there, first time I came to Germany, and when I was there, I said, I can't understand a word they're saying. So, but in the world tomorrow, or the millennium, everyone will speak the same language. It doesn't matter if you're over in China or down in Africa, so we all can understand each other.
Think about, as you think about the world to come, you know, we've just gotten out of Afghanistan. And when you look at that, we spent 20 years in Afghanistan. So has Afghanistan changed? Is it a better place than when we went in? And that just, you know, where it says fundamentally at the beginning of Isaiah that they will beat their swords into plowshares and not learn war anymore. And the reason they won't be learning war anymore because it's not resolved anything, not on a permanent basis. You look at Afghanistan, we went in there, you had people die, you had all the resources that were poured into it, and it didn't fix it. It's the same place as when Alexander the Great was there. It's the same place as when the British were there. Same place as when the Russians were there. And it's going to be the same place after we leave and whoever else comes in there, because you're not going to change the system there. But it needs to change, but it's going to change because of God's intervention. God intervening and sending the saints in who really understand what they need to do to make it the place a better place. So it's not going to be solved by war. It's going to be solved by the hard work of teaching and showing people the way. So it's going to be in, you know, like Islam is the religion there. It's not changed. Same religion as before. It's just their view is we're going to wait you guys out. Once you guys fail, we'll continue on with the way things have always been. And they're all divided up into tribes, and it's very hard to overcome the tribal system. And God's gonna change it. All those things will change, and they're going to say, I don't care if you're a pushtan, I don't care if you're from here or you're from there. We're all God's people, and we were all created for a purpose, and everybody's going to come to see that and then move toward that. Any other thoughts about things that will change? Yes. Lauren?
I would say, like, in summary of a lot of things that people have said, even, you know, from just struggling to have a garden be successful to, you know, people's relationships and us warring against each other, like, the world that we are used to is just one of constant decay and constant strife against it, really. So that won't be the case. It will be a world of renewal. And so people's labors that they, whatever they do with their hands, it will be prosperous. And also us teaching the world, it will also be prosperous. So that's something I always look forward to.
Yeah, it's a, you know, I had a friend of mine who was worried about when Christ returns, he's not going to be able to, you know, he enjoyed working with big machinery, pushing dirt, digging holes, all of that. And so he was worried when Christ comes, there won't be any of that. There won't be any big tractors and big digging tools and all of that kind of thing. Do you think that will be the case? Or we're all going to be using shovels and horses and mules and all of that? What do you think? You can do that. The Amish do it. Bob Looper?
I don't know where the scripture is, but he specifically said that he's going to give you a machine that will move a mountain. So there's going to be large earth-moving equipment of some sort. I think it's in Isaiah somewhere. So if anybody knows where that is, look it up.
We're not going to do the old Chinese method and dig it and put it in a bucket and have that piece of wood in between our shoulders and haul it all over there. I think there will be a certain level of mechanization that's available in a balanced way. And have any of you ever plowed and walked behind a horse to plow your land? I know that you guys have. Okay, yeah, it's hard work, isn't it? And trying to keep that keep it straight, and it's hard work. And And you know, you're walking every step behind that horse or that mule. And that mule's walked that, and so have you. And by the end of the day, you're tired. But you're also said, well, I got this portion of my land plowed and readied for the planting or whatever. So I think, you know, it's not going to be this return to no mechanization. You know, we're all going to, you know, sweat it out. It's not going to be like that. It's going to be a balance of the good things that we've come to know and some things we probably don't know that will be better than what we do know now. Any other comments that, yes?
I've always thought it was interesting that people would say, oh, well, you know, we will have, it'll be agrarian. And we'll all have our farms, and on the Sabbath we will have, everybody will be playing their musical instruments, you know, for music, and it won't be big bands and all this. And it's like, wait a minute, you've got to have a mining industry to be able to make musical instruments, and they'll probably all have Bibles, which involves a printing industry. And so, you know, I feel like there will be some industry during the millennium.
I think so too. I think that they'll, you know, apply technology in a way that is in harmony with the environment, but it's going to produce good things that are going to last and that will be of value. So you think God's going to, no paper, so we're not going to have any Bibles? I don't think that's the case. And you look at buildings. You don't think God's going to build? He's going to build his temple. So there's going to be building take place. And it will be well made, and it will last for a long, long time. Yes? Rich, I guess.
I don't think there'll be any zoos.
I enjoy the zoo.
But the animals are all supposed to be friendly, so I don't have to worry about a lion eating me. Also, I don't know what percentage of animals that were ever created in the Garden of Eden and up to the flood of Noah and all the diversity, but you know, mankind has killed off so many breeds of animals. I'm looking forward to seeing a real unicorn.
We may still be waiting on that, but anyway, little kids will be looking forward to the unicorn. But I mean, for going to Montana, since we were going there, I came across this book about Custer and Crazy Horse, which was interesting. As the book began, it's talking about the Great Plains and what a great acquisition that was, and how wonderful it was on the plains when you had millions and millions of buffalo roaming free, and talked about the qualities of that. Just reading the first chapter of that book is well worth it because of the description of the Great Plains and what a magnificent place it was that we don't recognize. We see buffalo, but there aren't that many of them, and they're in a confined space. But these were just running free, and I'm not sure that's the solution either, based upon the population that's going to exist on the earth, unless there's something I'm not seeing. So you're going to have all of these animals that will be available, and like it says, there's going to be a change in the nature of all these animals. Yes, Liz?
What I'm going to look forward to is watching the video of my family and other, my parents, and in true history with how things actually happened, but how you can really go back and see your ancestors. And I envision like a video, just watching, okay, they came from here, they came from here, how you are going all the way back. So that's something I always thought, that'll be interesting.
We'll get 3D genealogy, and yes, sir. Over here.
Okay. First, back to the poverty thing. I think there will be poverty because life's about making choices, right? And the humans that come up under us, or hopefully we're spirit beings, they'll still be having to make choices and learn the Torah. Otherwise, Moses wouldn't have codified in the Deuteronomic code, I think it's like 22 or 23. I don't remember the exact verse, but he codifies that if an Israelite becomes impoverished, his brothers shall come in. So that's actually in code where the brothers come in and rebuilding. The second thing is about one of the things you look forward to, Christmas will be abolished, right? So in Isaiah, I don't remember that scripture either, but the pine trees will rejoice.
Well, as you look at the Bible gives you hints about various things that are going to take place that are going to bring about improvements in the world. For instance, you're going to have the laws that God has already recorded and established in the scriptures that are going to be applied in the way that God originally intended them to be, to be used to create a society. God's goal when he gave Israel the law was not to make the law miserable and a burden. It was to enable the people of Israel to prosper, and prosper to the extent that their neighbors would see what they were doing and how it was working and say, you know what? These people, this works. We want to understand what they're doing. And they were to be an example to the world. And if that was not achievable, God wouldn't have asked it of them. But, they're human, and humans are unfortunately fall short. But it's telling you that all of that's going to be a reality. It's all of that's going to be available to all people, and we're going to see a transformed world. And think about, you know, what one of the challenges that we face today is, you know, when you look at, religion is a powerful force. And true religion can be a powerful force, but unfortunately, you've had a lot of false religion that's impacted the world. You know, you've had false religion bring about the Dark Ages. And they were dark, for, called dark for a reason, because people lived in darkness. You know, it's if you want to kind of get an inkling of that, go back and read a book called World Lit Only by Fire. Pretty interesting, but it's amazing about the world that was in the Middle Ages and what it was like. People lived in ignorance. People lived in, you know, they didn't know anything other than what their priests told them. And it's a and that's not going to be the case anymore. So, you know, I drive into Sugar Land and you've got all these big churches with their steeples. So what's going to happen to all those churches with their big steeples? I don't think they're going to be around. And God's going to build different structures. And I've always thought that you'll have multi-use structures. You know, as how many of us have met in a school for church? Nothing wrong with that. So you have, and this is just my thinking, multi-use structures that you can use for a school, you can use for a church meeting, and a meeting hall for the community. You don't have to have separate and distinct buildings for everything. You can have them as multi-use buildings. And you're not going to have any separation of church and state, because the church and state will be one. That particular perspective will be gone. But you're going to have these buildings that will be available and part, they'll be part of your community. You know, if you've ever tried to go rent a building, it's sometimes a real hassle. Well, we want to use it for a wedding. Well, great. What day do you want? And you want to have it for a get-together for your family, you know, family reunions and all of this. It's harder to do that today, whereas in the world to come, it's all going to be one great cooperative effort. You want your community to be successful. You want people to enjoy life there and prosper there. And you want everybody to prosper. So, I mean, it's things that we have come to know and just accept will be gone. You know, no more crosses, no more steeples, no more of the religious art and all of the stuff that goes on with that. That's going to be gone. No more of that. And you're only going to have, and you know, you're going to have art that really is beautiful and functional for people to enjoy. And it's going to be a complete, basically sweeping out everything that we're used to today. And it's going to be interesting what takes place. So what's anybody thought about the, are we going to continue with the educational system that we have today? So why not? Rich?
Speaking of education, of course, they're not going to continue with what we have today. But I'm thinking about the education God's going to have for all of us who are spirit beings as we're going through the millennium and the next phase of populating the universe. I mean, what type of training are we going to have? Because I can't imagine that the millennium ends and then we start learning about going out to terraforming planets or stars and things of that nature that are out there. And it's just awesome to contemplate that because it's out there for a purpose.
So what's the world going to be like at the end of the 1,000 years? At the end of the 1,000 years, what's the world going to be like? Anybody have a summary thought? Where, you know, you're going to have come full circle. Yes, Lori?
I don't know if this isn't what you're thinking of, but... No, what's
I'm seeking to put this into your mind.
Okay,
so.
Well,
Go ahead.
Because he's been trying for 15 years and it hasn't worked. But the world's going to be based on truth. And that's what gets me today. You cannot find truth anywhere. You know, whether it's right-wingers or left-wingers or whatever the cable news is, there's just no truth out there. And Jesus Christ is the God of truth. So everything's going to be based on that. So the educational system will be based on truth.
Yes, the truth. But and the truth is going to have benefits, all right? And you're going to be back to where Adam and Eve started. You're going to be back to the Garden of Eden. But the Garden of Eden was in a restricted location in the area of Jerusalem when God originally made it and had Adam and Eve in there. And that garden is going to be reestablished, but not just in a part of the area where Israel lives, but it's going to be worldwide. It's going to be a garden that's just so magnificent and wonderful with the plants and the trees and the water. All of those kinds of things are going to be established, and it's going to be a world like we've never seen. Yes, and the animals will be there, but you know, the animals aren't going to be aggressive like the ones we have today. We're not going to have snakes that we have to worry about and our kids sticking their hands down in the hole with the viper. We're not going to have any of that. We're going to have a world that is in peace and in harmony, and it's just, and God's going to be living there with you. He's been dwelling with you for 1,000 years, and he's been instrumental to what's been developed, and it's developed because God's way of life has been put into practice, and it brings benefits to where everybody will be able to enjoy it. Because it's going to be lush, it's going to be green, it's going to be everything that we wish it would be now. And it'll be available to everybody. It's just so wonderful, and it's going to be like the Garden of Eden. Truth is foundational to it, and that's why you can have the Garden of Eden all over the earth, because the truth has been believed and lived by, and everybody's able to enjoy the benefits of it. That's what's so amazing by the fact that it's going to be established when Satan is released at the end of the 1,000 years. That's to me, that just boggles my mind, that you're going to have the Garden of Eden, which has come about because of the direct action of God and his people, and people being converted and living that way. And after 1,000 years of success, Satan is released, and what's the first thing he does? He leads a rebellion. And people actually go along with it, and you're like, okay, what's going to be better than what's here right now? You know, people, you know, to me, there's some screwy thinking there, but obviously there is going to be. And God said, okay, enough of this. And then he's going to move into the great white throne judgment period, where he raises up the rest of the dead. But the rest of the dead are going to come up in the Garden of Eden. They're back at that point where Adam and Eve were 6,000 years ago. Let me get it right. 6,000 years ago. I think that's it, 6,000. And they're going to, or maybe it's 7. So anyway, they're going to be back there where Adam and Eve started. And they're going to, all these people are going to rise up, and they're going to think, wow, look at this. And you're going to have a whole system set up to guide them and direct them as you go forward. So what God promises to you and me and all people is so absolutely wonderful that it's well worth us thinking about it and going to the feast and hearing about it and learning about it and then taking to heart those things that are said. Those are worth things worth meditating on. You know, meditate on them. How will this all work out, and why will it be better? Do we need it? Absolutely. Every day seems to emphasize that. But, you know, God wants us to go up to the feast. He wants us to see this kingdom, this city made without hands, that's going to be available for all of us. And he wants us to be a part of it. He wants us to be there. So hopefully we will all take it to heart and go through the changes necessary, and we will be ready to be a part of it, because God's invited you and me not just to be there, but to be a part of making it happen. That's a big job, an exciting job. Whatever you're doing today, you've got to stop and think, I think this is going to be bigger and better and more exciting than anything that I'm doing. And God wants us to be there and be a part of it and help his son get the job done. So any questions as we close here for today? Yes, Bob? Oop. Bob Radcliffe. Bob Radcliffe.
I just had a closing comment about little Johnny when he steals Ed's cow. He's not going to be milking. He's going to be working a pitchfork.
Yeah, he may be cleaning out some stalls or something along that line, you know, learning some lessons. So thanks, everybody, for your attention. Thanks for the opportunity to converse with you about things about the world to come. And so we'll see you on Tuesday. Tuesday will be the Feast of Trumpets, the first day of the seventh month, and so the beginning of the Holy Days. So please have a nice couple of days, and we'll see you on Tuesday. For those who are going to come to the wedding, we'll see you tomorrow. So please have a great evening ahead.